Imagine your life as a string of lights, each bulb marking a moment that changed you. Now imagine adding a vibrant new bulb to that string, a brand experience so powerful it becomes an unforgettable part of who you are. That's the magic we chase at The Voice of Experience, your go-to podcast for the art, science, and secrets of making brands unforgettable. We'll crack open the craft of memory making to prove how experiences leave their mark and connect us to brands and products forever. This is your bite-sized masterclass of the mind-blowing science behind memories, real-world case studies of unforgettable experiences, and actionable takeaways that will have you seeing marketing and your brand differently. Welcome to The Voice of Experience. Let's make your brand shine brighter than ever before. Here are your hosts, Elke Jones and Max Linderman.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Voice of Experience. Max, what's poppin'?
Papa Lockin, how you doing, Elke?
I do it. God, dude, you always right off the bat.
I know. I just wanted. I just needed it. I needed to
so
get it.
So on brand. So on brand. I'm good. I'm excited for today because we are joined by two very special GMR friends, Fran Sutter, who's the head of sustainability at GMR, and Ala Dragoon, who is senior strategist. Welcome, Fran and Ala.
Thanks, Elke. Happy to be here. Thanks, Max.
Hi, guys.
Hi. All right. Our topic today is one that is near and dear to our hearts and so many others. So friends, this is no secret. We all get that the experience marketing space is pretty notorious for significant waste generation. This includes things like single-use plastics, promotional materials, food waste, disposable decor, much of which ends up in landfills. So let's discuss today our perception and the reality of our industry being environmentally intensive and not very sustainable, knowing that there's pressure and opportunity for improvement through greener practices and technologies. So shall we dive in?
Let's go.
All right. A recent 2025 study shows that 91% of Gen Z humans want to buy from sustainable companies, and over 70% consider sustainability important in their purchase decisions. But there's a noted gap between these values and then actual brand behavior. So what gives? Ala?
Oh, what gives? That's so right. Well, I'd argue that when we use words like wanting and considering, I don't think those are values. What makes something a value? Is it the things that we say, or is it the things that we do? So if you say, for instance, that you value kindness and you value yourself, or you view yourself as a moral person, but you go online and you troll people or you bully people, do we judge you by your stated values that you think kindness is so important? Or do we judge you by your behavior? And I think that's the key. I think that's what brands do. They react to consumer behavior, not to stated values. And I'll give you an example. We all want to be fit. We all want to be healthy. We all want to make smart financial decisions. We all obviously want to be the best version of ourselves. And yet junk food brands exist. Credit card companies exist with their, what is it now, like 30% APRs. Right? Like,
yeah.
Why do those exist if it's so important for us to be healthy and financially stable? Well, because our behaviors demonstrate a demand for those products. And so I think you can't really measure values with these self-reported surveys. As much as I wish it were all true, I think we need to measure values by actually observing people's behavior. And I'll give you one counterpoint or one caveat there. And I'd say, the only time that we can't really observe behavior is with availability. So people might say that they want to buy from sustainable companies, and that might be totally true. But if the price or the quality or the convenience of those sustainable alternatives aren't at parity with non-sustainable alternatives, then you can't really go by behavior alone. You have to evaluate it in the context of what's available for people.
Sure.
It's a long-winded response, but yeah, I wish it were all true.
Okay. Fran, Max, anything else to add or a different point of view?
I'll just add, I mean, I think I'll really jump to it, which is, you know, convenience, price, ease. And I think these are things that brands really need to take note of and incorporate into the solution. People aren't doing this because it's the right thing to do, nor are businesses doing it because it's the right thing to do. It's good for business.
Yeah, love that. Okay, so there are events out there that are centered around sustainability. It's sort of part of the overall mission and the event operations. Do the brands that activate at these types of events actually align with that mission? What are we seeing, Ala?
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago, I went to, down in Fort Lauderdale, Tortuga Music Festival, and it's essentially a big country music festival, but also it's a benefit to support an organization called Rock the Ocean, which is a nonprofit group, and it funds eco-friendly initiatives that benefit marine wildlife and marine ecosystems. So there's this, like, concert component, and it was beautiful. It's right on the beach. So there's this concert component. People are there to have fun, listen to the music they love, drink, party, whatever. And then a component of this festival was this like kind of an expo of nonprofits. And you could go around and learn about like sharks or the manatees or coral reefs, etc. But what struck me when I was there was the brands that were showing up and had, you know, experiential footprints there didn't necessarily align with, like, you wouldn't think of them when you think of eco-friendly brands. And I'll give you one of the examples, like Dunkin' was there. And I'm like, dude, your whole business model is hinged on single-use plastics. Like, what are you doing here? So yeah, I don't think that we're necessarily seeing the alignment there. And it almost feels like it's like sometimes festivals might take sponsorship from just like the highest bidder. You just take the money where you can get it, which makes it feel kind of like it loses credibility a little bit.
Sure. Fran, in all of your work, what are you seeing?
Yeah, I think the festivals that I have seen that are really delivering on brand alignment to those values really slim down the pickings in terms of who is there. And I think it's probably to their detriment. So there's definitely a disconnect there.
Gotcha. All right. I'm going to ask maybe what could be considered a bit of a controversial question. And I would love all three of you to weigh in. Max, I'll kick it to you last because I want you to weigh in from the creative perspective, if you don't mind. So question is this. So there's a debate in the world of environmental sustainability. Many brands are taking, I'll call them like baby steps into sustainability. And we see that play out in the experience marketing space all the time. But are those baby steps considered greenwashing? Fran, thoughts?
Yes, I wish you all could see the look on my face. It's one of contemplation. Look, I think people can relate to not being perfect and also having to take steps towards a goal. So that's true of brands as well. And, you know, incremental improvement is improvement. And we've got a lot to do in the environmental space, and we can't do everything at once. So long way of saying, I don't think it is greenwashing. It really depends on how it's delivered and the intent behind it. So, you know, of course, unsubstantiated or misleading claims are greenwashing. But for example, I value brands that, you know, eliminate plastic. And so I look for that. I want a brand to tell me that this is a plastic-free package. It increases my consideration. You know, that has to be very clear and specific and accurate. However, if it was like eco packaging or environmentally friendly, you know, you get two strikes really in my thoughts. It's your lack of clarity, but also you don't have any substance to the claims. So I really think it depends on how it's delivered, but incremental improvement is still improvement.
Ala, do you have a different point of view?
Well, I mean, I agree with Fran. Incremental improvement is improvement. It's just, I think I come at this with a lot less patience. I get a little ragey about it. I think I think major corporate, like, we talk about baby steps, but we're infantilizing major corporations who need to be held accountable for the externalities of their business operations. Like, you know, you're profiting off of this, and we as a society are all paying for the negative outputs of it. So when we talk about, like, baby steps, you know, at some point we have to stop applauding the baby steps and get a little ragey and really, like, hold companies accountable for the harm that they're creating.
I love the rage, Allah. I do. It is also a little on brand. Anyway, Max, question for you. So creatively, you know, how difficult is it to think about an experience in terms of being sustainable?
Oh, not hard at all, because in a strange sense that as you start thinking of ideas, you are thinking of them like contextually and dimensionally agnostic, right? Like, it's just like you have to start with an insight or a truth or a foundational disconnect or tension that kind of creates the idea by itself. And then you start kind of figuring out the production. I think from a creative perspective, where it tends to fall apart is in the production side of the equation, is when you're running to make the best idea happen, you start making choices on behalf of the idea rather than on behalf of the planet, right? And so in that regard, it could get dicey. However, like, you know, I've been fascinated by the back and forth between Allah and Fran, because I agree with everything, right? And it's hard to agree with everything, you know what I mean? Like, and I there is a foundational shift that's occurred maybe in the past 10 years in the purpose space, in the sustainability space, where there's a more realistic, I'm not going to go all the way to say cynical, but a more realistic approach to it. And it could, to me, it really gets summed up in a quote that's not my own, and I don't know who to attribute it to, but it came to mind in listening to Allah and Fran. It's not principle unless it costs you money, right? Right, and ultimately, that's really when we talk about what a brand wants. Right. A brand wants and you ask the question about a creative, and both a brand and a creative wants the same thing: money and fame. And money and fame, because that gives you share growth. That gives you opportunities to partner. It gives you the collabs. It gives you everything. And if that opportunity to find money and fame happens to be through the lens of we're more sustainable than the other guy, great. Right. Like, don't be ashamed of it. But I think where brands are pushing back on or pulling back on in a more kind of reactionary way is on the a priori, we're more sustainable. We started because we're more sustainable. I think, you know, like that kind of, like, look at Method. I mean, Method did a great job in starting that way, starting the conversation, right? But now, you know, you would think that with all the information out there in terms of, you know, climate change and ocean plastics and plastics in our blood, there's plastics everywhere, you would think that Method would be number one right now. Everyone would have turned their head around and being like, why am I still buying Tide? Because, because in a weird way, there's a people don't want to be reminded of sustainability when they're doing their dishes, right? Like, and so I look at the way that creatives can really look at sustainability in a better way is that, does this help the idea? Does this help the the opportunity for fame? Does it help for the opportunity to ask for more money? And if all of it is yes, yes, and yes, I'm like all for it, 100%. Now, conversely, if a creative director came back and be like, you know what we should do? We should just do fill a room with, you know, one of those styrofoam packing crate stuff and not do anything with it. Of course, that idea gets killed because it's not culturally like acceptable anymore. Yeah. Right. And so you find that in creative ways, the notion of what culture is accepted and what culture hasn't just comes out in the idea itself rather than in the message of the idea.
It's funny because you triggered for me. Aren't those things called packing peanuts?
Packing, that's what you're talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, you can't, like, Once those get on your person, it's impossible to get them off. But yeah, you just don't see those anymore. But all really good points. Fran, I had heard you say that you find it interesting that festivals create these sort of self-contained little communities for a very short period of time, food, drink, restrooms, water, and every, you know, everyone that's there and sort of all of the things that are related to those communities is subject to their rules. Yet, so often they aren't taking the opportunity to create a more sustainable space. Talk to me a little bit more about that.
Right. This is something I've observed so much over all my years in festivals. And the most recent calculations of the amount of waste created by festival goers in the United States is 53,000 tons of waste each year.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's jarring. And so I just reflect on that space and these boundaries that are created by, you know, a ticketed area and how much opportunity there is, yet how little progress we see.
Yeah, so my question then, and I'll open it up to whoever wants to respond first. If we, as an agency partner, were to advise festivals on sustainability, what would we suggest they do? Who wants to take that one?
Off the top of my head?
Do it.
I mean, as with anything, is find exceptionality to all your other competitors and go all in on it, right? Like there's going to be a festival, one festival that's going to be a zero waste festival, the first one, like, or like a take in what you carry out kind of festival.
I think those already exist.
Right. So like,
yeah.
What's the next step, right? Like, so like make it into an arms race, like make it into a core kind of like communication element that positions you better than your competition. I mean, isn't that what like marketing and advertising really is finding the white space for you to go all in on. And if this is the one, if we're saying that there's a prevalence of this kind of like status quo, then become a challenger brand in that status quo and see what happens.
Yeah. I love that. Fran, Ala.
I'll jump in real quick. I agree with that. And I think also, just because of my recent experience at Tortuga, like, be picky. I don't know the intricacies of sponsorship for festivals in and out, but the money will come. The money will come from somewhere. So I'd say keep those standards high. Don't settle for the types of brands that you allow in your space. What you're offering as a festival is really valuable. There's a demand for that. People are coming from all over the place to watch the bands you're bringing together, the entertainment that you're putting forth, and that there's a lot of value in that. So be picky about who you're inviting into that space, if that's truly a value of yours.
Yeah, I think also, you know, the harder it is as a sponsor to get into something, like the more you want to be there.
Yeah.
So I do think that you can ask for compliance and have really high expectations when it comes to what you do and don't allow.
Small counterpoint.
Yeah, do it.
Like, I don't know Tortuga Festival. I just researched it and I see that the 3-day festival had Jelly Roll, Keith Urban, and Luke Combs as the headliners, with Ludacris and Shaboozy and a bunch of other
all your favorites, Max.
That I'm too old to do. But the thought that I had is that part of the job of the festival is to cater to the audience as well, right? And if that audience loves Duncan, give them Duncan, but work with Duncan to create, again, that sense of exceptionalism or a little bit of challenger, to put some of your own money in to create a more sustainable Dunkin' Donuts experience, right? So it's like, I don't think there's a binary way of going about this. And I do think that it's always going to be an opportunity to become more creative based upon brand needs, audience needs, global business needs, and basically cultural needs. And so, like, I would say that, like, I don't know Jelly Roll, Keith Urban, and Luke Combs as human beings, and I don't know if their audiences are passionate about the environment. If they were, then of course a Dunkin' Donuts would probably be excluded out of that experience. But if they aren't, isn't the whole point of the Tortuga Music Festival, yes, is to raise money, but I guarantee you more turtles would be saved if more people came to Tortuga Music Festival. And if that audience isn't being catered to in the way that audience being catered to, turtles will suffer.
I do think, though, Max. Yeah, I do think, though, like Vegan Fest last year, for example, they just said to all of their sponsors, no single-use plastics, like full stop, like just, and they all had to find alternatives, paper, wood, bamboo, blah, blah, blah. Everyone just got it done. It just was an expectation. So I do, yes, it's not binary. I totally agree with that. But I do think that the festivals can just say, like, this is just not allowed.
But the context is the Vegan Festival, not Jelly Roll, Keith Urban, and Luke Combs. Like, that is a very acceptable, audience-centric, hey, we're going to create, basically a point of difference based upon our audience and our values, right? I do think that there is a miss on Tortuga's Music Festival for having a run-of-the-mill, if I will, like, you know, a Dunkin' Donuts experience that went to Tortuga shouldn't be the same experience that went to Coachella for Dunkin' Donuts. It should be amenable to the context of the festival, but also the audience needs. And so I think there's, you know, I think there's context that needs to be incorporated into the values of the experience.
Anyone else have a POV before we wrap up?
Yeah, can I just one quick, because it ties back to the very beginning, what you're saying, Max, is that they're making it easy at Vegan Festival to choose to have something without plastic. Why couldn't we make it easy if we know that the intention by the majority of humans is that they want to do the right thing, that you could do it in more instances? And that's why I think festivals are prime for it, because they have a captive audience.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Fran. Okay, so to wrap up, still lots of opportunity, but also some movement in the right direction in creating experiences that not only reduce environmental impact, but also create brand moments that are meaningful, inclusive, and memorable. And I personally want to believe that there's a future of experience marketing that is green. And by choosing sustainability, we're not just changing events, we're shaping a better world for all of us. So Fran, Ala, thank you for joining me today, and Max, and for this amazing conversation. We really appreciate you.
Thanks, Fran and Ala. I love guests. More guests.
The guests are good. Yes, we'll have more guests.
These are great guests.
They are A++. What is it? 10 out of 10, no notes. I think that's what you're supposed to say now, right? And thanks to all of our listeners, of course. Till next time.
Bye.
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 Thank you.
The Voice of Experience is produced by GMR Marketing, an Omnicom experiential group agency. All content is the property of GMR Marketing. Join us next time for more knowledge, data, insights, and secrets of the art and science of making brands unforgettable. For more information, contact us at gmrmarketing.com.